Good morning, everyone. Today is the most auspicious day of Guru Purnima. And as you can see, the three wise men in my life, my spiritual teacher, Ramesh Balsekar, his guru, Nisargadatta Maharaj, and his master, Siddha Rameshwar Maharaj. I may have mentioned this before, but do allow me to repeat it. You see, I was never interested in this word guru or the concept of a guru. I thought it's only for certain people who need that crutch and hook. And when I met my teacher, it was not love at first sight. Consciously. It is only after visiting him, maybe over 4 or 5 Sundays, that I concluded that this person's teaching is a validation of my life's experience so far. So when he would make very simple statements, like whatever happens is the will of God, events are beyond your control, they were so simple that they tend to get overlooked, you see. But thankfully for me, it was almost a spontaneous reflection of the events in my life. Then he would say, nobody truly does anything. It is all the will of consciousness. Once again, I could see that. I could see how people can't help being themselves, including myself. When he would say, we are all operating on 2 factors, our conditioning and genetics, over neither of which did we have control. Once again, I said, this makes total sense. So you see, for me, it was quite literally, as far as the mind is concerned, process which was step by step but very fast. It was like running up steps. And so I concluded the word guru, if we remove this conditioning of long beards, and as you can see, none of them have beards, and malas and a trident next to them and all the paraphernalia and so on, is nothing but the remover of ignorance, the bringer of light. That is it. As simple as that. That is why we say in India that the parents are our first gurus, then come our teachers. And then someone who helps you navigate this journey of life. The ego thinks it can do it alone. What the ego does not realize is that the guru is not an individual apart from the disciple. That is the illusion. And therefore, Jnaneshwar said, alone there is no happiness. Therefore, pure consciousness assumes the role of guru and disciple. Alone there is no happiness. Therefore, pure consciousness assumes the role of guru and disciple. So while the disciple things, may say disciple, devotee, seeker, whatever, while the disciple thinks that he chooses the guru, the choice has already been made by pure consciousness. This is what Jnaneshwar is pointing to. And this is one relationship which is pure because there are no conditions attached to it. The disciple makes no conditions to the guru, and neither does the guru. Perhaps, as Maharaj would say to his disciples, earnestness and sincerity is all that is needed. You could call those conditions, if at all. So the guru-disciple relationship has already happened before the two forms come together as guru and disciple. That is the limitation of the mind, that it thinks that I have come across many teachers and now this one I appoint as my guru. That decision has already been taken. That is the grace of consciousness. And as Rameshji would say, as Nisargadatta Maharaj would say, generally, people who are drawn to this teaching have seen a lot in life already. They were called the gurus of the last resort. When one has seen enough ups and downs, pleasures and pains, then one wants to come and rest in this teaching. It reminds me of when Osho used to say very nasty things about Nisargadatta Maharaj. I don't think he got a response, but one day, someone from the Osho ashram was sent to, what shall I say, rattle the satsang, Maharaj's satsang. And all Maharaj did was ask him, where are you from? And he said, from the Osho ashram. And Maharaj replied that, why don't you go back and finish your jumping and dancing and then come here. What he meant was, do all that you think you can do, all the activities, all the spiritual techniques, all the programs, be done with that, and then come back. You see, I'm reminded of a very beautiful story of Jnaneshwar, young lad, he and his siblings, Nivrittinath, Muktabai, Jnaneshwar, and Sopan. These children lost their parents because their parents committed suicide because they were considered as outcasts. It's a long story, so I won't go into it. They had special gifts. When confronted, they made a bull chant the Vedas, empowered children. One day, they were playing on a wall, and one highly regarded yogi, who was famous for riding a tiger and using a snake as a whip, and this is recorded, this is not folklore, perhaps it's there on the internet. He had heard a lot about these children and he could not imagine, you know, not just one person so young, but a whole flock of these siblings was as enlightened as they sounded. So he decided to pay them a visit. So he went in full pomp and glory and procession, all dressed up, decked up, with people beating drums, he emerged from the forest and he went towards them, towards where they were playing. Now the youngest of them saw the great Changdev approaching, the most famous tantric and so on in the state. And they realized he's a great man. So they told him, when they saw him approaching, please wait. We are so honored that you have come all the way to see us. Allow us now to come and see you. And then the wall on which they were playing on moved towards the procession, towards Changdev, and he was stunned. His whole procession was taken aback. And then the siblings got off the wall and he got down on the floor and prostrated before them. And he said, what is the message for me? He told these young children. And they replied, all this which we are seeing is all going outwards, all this pomp and show and glory. But go within, O sage, O master, go within. This within is the journey of the guru and disciple. When you have realized that happiness cannot depend on outside things, on material things, on relationships, on your job, as we are seeing today, what can it depend upon? What is that elusive true happiness? Something which does not depend on anything. True happiness is a happiness that does not depend on anything. Therefore, it is true. And what is that? Peace, equanimity, and calm. And who shows you the way to that? The Guru, who is not apart from you. Because if the Guru says something and you resonate with it, that means you already know it. Otherwise, you would not resonate with it. That's the joke. You might hear some noise because it's raining heavily here. In fact, the window is a bit open, so you might have to close it. Yes, there's a breeze, so the candles are... Please give me a second and I'll be back. You know, the other day, someone sent me... It was a Muslim poet from Lucknow called Krishna Bihari Noor. And one of his verses begins with, Zindagi se badi saza hi nahi. There is no greater punishment than life. And so many people have suffered that truth, you see. That is why Rameshji would say, thank God for your suffering, because it can be much worse. That is why he would say that life is imprisonment, because not from a negative point of view, but because it is so obvious that what is so vast and abundant has now been limited to a form and an ego identity. And that ego identity has now converted the simple imprisonment to rigorous imprisonment. That is what has happened. It reminds me of another story on immortality, quite popular, of Alexander the Great and the crow. So Alexander the Great, as we all know, conquered vast lands. It's quite unfortunate that he was called the Great because it was all looting and plundering and conquering. But those are the human values we cherished and cherish. Plunder and invasion and domination and control. We all do it. We are all doing it in our own subtle ways. Only some are doing it on a larger scale. What is amazing is that between the age of 16 to 32, it happened. So obviously it was God's will, you see. But anyway, coming to this point, Alexander was most interested in immortality. And therefore, he was fascinated with India. So he was on his way to India and he arrived here. And he told his soldiers, find me a master, a yogi. I want to learn about immortality from him. So he said to Alexander, where do we go? He said, they'll be generally in the forests. They'll be alone. They will not be amongst people. So off they went and they came across one such yogi. He was sitting in his meditation. They woke him up and said, our master is calling you. And the yogi said, I have no interest to meet your master, whoever he is. So they said, don't be obstinate. This is an order. We are soldiers and Alexander the Great seeks your audience. So we have to take you. So the yogi replied, I truly don't care who he is and why he wants to meet me. I have no interest and please don't continue disturbing my meditation. So the soldier said, if this is so, our instruction is to chop your head off. If you resist. And the yogi replied, by all means, you can chop off my head. But pray tell me, what will Alexander do with my head? So they were quite flummoxed. So they decided not to, you know, chop his head off, because if they went back to Alexander and he said the same thing, they'd be in trouble. So they went back to Alexander and said, we found this man, but this is the problem. And Alexander was very impressed. He said, I will come to see him. Who can dare resist my command? And so Alexander went and met the yogi. And he asked the yogi, I want immortality. What is the secret? And the yogi replied, are you sure you want immortality? He said, yes, I've been wanting it all my life. He said, all right, walk further till you reach a cave. And in that cave, there's a pool of water. Cup your hands and drink only one cup full of water and you will be immortal. And Alexander was thrilled. So simple, can you imagine? And so he went and found the cave, went into the cave, found the water, and bent down. And as he bent down, he could hear a crow. The cawing of a crow right next to the pond. And it stopped him. And the crow told Alexander, "Do you know what you're doing?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Are you sure you want immortality?" He said, "Of course." He said, "Look at me. I made the same mistake. I came to this pond. I drank the water. And now, what is my life? I have been here thousands of years. Everyone I loved has gone. There is pleasure and pain, pleasure and pain, pleasure and pain. Nothing changes. Everything is transient. I'm buffeted between these two polarities. Is this worth wanting an immortal life for? I'm fed up of being stuck here. Things move, things change. That is the nature of life. What are you going to do for thousands of years? You will run out of lands to plunder. Then what? Pleasures and pains will come your way. Illnesses will come your way. Then what?" And Alexander was stunned. Because he had never thought about all that. And he thanked the crow, didn't take a drop, and left the cave. That is the story of the immortal crow. And we all seek to be immortal in daily living. The ego does not want to die, you see. That is why there's conflict. We argue and fight. How dare you tell me this? This is my point of view. My way is the right way. You are wrong. The ego is afraid of the death of the me. That is why it does all this stuff in daily living. Me, 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 me. It does not want to die. It wants to assert itself all the time. This is me. This is me and my story. This is me and my house. This is me and my car. This is me and my relationships. This is me and my opinions. This is me and my judgments. The guru brings this house the me lives in, crumbling down, wipes away these delusions. That is the role of the guru. For some, it is a beautiful, gentle process of recognition when they are exposed to the teachings. For others, it is painful, depending on how encrusted the me is with everything that separates it from the outside, so to speak. But either way, gentle or traumatic, it is the journey home. It is the journey which will annihilate the thinking mind of the ego. Thoughts may still come. Thoughts come from outside. My teacher would always say that. And science has proven that the brain reacts half a second after the thought comes. So they are truly not my thoughts. Thoughts are not the problem. It is the thinking stretched in the duration of time that is the problem. That is what is addressed by the teaching. I will read out some sentences of what the great master Aurobindo said on this point. "The real truth is that all these thoughts and activities are natures and come into us or pass through us as waves from the universal nature. It is our egoism and our limitations in the body and individual physical mind which prevent us from feeling and experiencing this truth. The idea that you are shaping the thoughts or fitting them together is an egoistic delusion. For the yogi, the image of the factory of thoughts is no longer valid. For he sees that thoughts come from outside, from the universal mind or universal nature. Sometimes formed and distinct, sometimes unformed, and then they are given shape somewhere in us. So this teaching is not training its guns on thoughts, but on the thinking, which is the ego, with its sense of doership. Laura had asked this question last time, and this is addressing it in part. I hope Laura is there and listening. So this teaching is not an exercise in concentration, focus, seeing that thoughts don't arise. It is just about witnessing whatever arises. Because when you witness whatever arises, you lose interest in it in a sense, because you are not entangled in it. Ignorance is when you are entangled in the cartwheels of the thinking mind and your life, your precious life story. The first step is witnessing. Not observing, because observing means still it is done by an individual, because the individual judges. Witnessing whatever arises in life. That is the first step taken on the journey. And then what happens? What is the so-called second step? That the attention now shifts, because one loses interest in what is happening in life in that sense. One is not disturbed by it to the degree one was involved and mired in it. The attention shifts to what is that when it is not mired in the illusion of life. One understands one is more present. So what was out here is now like this within. Presence. It's not presence arises, because presence is always there. Otherwise you would be dead. Presence is recognized. That there is this vast field of presence where whatever I see arises, whatever I think arises. So one is now resting more and more in that presence, which was earlier overlooked. That is the going within. That is the role of the guru, to recognize your own true nature, which is pure and pristine conscious presence, not tainted by the sense of doership and all the baggage thereafter of hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, blame, condemnation, guilt, shame, pride, arrogance, and so on. When all this is dropped, obviously the thinking mind is disengaged. That is pure being. It is pure being, being present. Okay. So if anyone wants to ask anything or share something, they are welcome to do so now.
Hello, good morning. You you said that the teaching is not training its guns on thoughts, but it's training its guns on beliefs, right?
Yes, and thinking associated with all those beliefs.
Yeah, so is it correct to say that beliefs are the building blocks of ego? Is that the house of ego?
Absolutely.
Okay, so is a belief the same as identification?
Without identification, there won't be beliefs. So it is the same.
Okay.
Two sides of the same coin.
So is every concept a belief?
Yes, because it is a concept.
Okay. Can we say that beliefs are a kind of congealed energy? Is it that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, those were my questions. Thanks.
What is not congealed energy as such is the sense of presence. So, if we look at it in a dramatic way, as I keep pointing out, as my teacher would, if your memory was completely wiped out, your memory, which is the basis of your beliefs of something good happening to me and bad happening to me, and your conditioning, if your memory was completely wiped off right now at the press of a button, you would still be aware that you exist. I am. That does not depend on memory. That I am is always there, always present. That is the uncongealed energy. That is why in certain systems, let's take Kundalini Yoga. I'm more familiar with it because my mother is a Kundalini master. You see, what happens is the process of awakening, which should certainly not be forced. Many people go to all these classes and courses with this intention of raising the Kundalini. It should be a natural process. What happens is when the energy rises, all the congealment which we are talking about, which is trapped emotions, beliefs, thought processes, structures, and all, they start opening up through the light of Shakti, the pure power, the pure presence. So that congealment starts dissolving with any path, be it Advaita, be it Kundalini Yoga, Kriya Yoga, whatever. This is the process. This congealment here starts liquefying,
yes,
starts disintegrating, so that the pure light of awareness, being, peace, shines through more and more. So in that sense, that is what happens. It is literally a journey to the light, quite literally.
Amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. You see, in the Indian tradition, it is held that lifetimes upon lifetimes, rebirth after rebirth takes place. If one is not aware, if one is not conscious, because with death, it is only the body that drops off. The congealed energy, which is the vasanas and samskaras, the unfulfilled desires and tendencies, which is still like a subtle ball, is still left because the issues have not been resolved. Only the physical body has dropped away. So it is that bundle of vasanas and samskaras, of, you could say, congealed energy, which keeps reincarnating.
Yeah.
So what the spiritual teachings do is they throw light on all this, that this is the gift of the human birth.
Yeah, but
explore it. Yeah. Yes.
There seems to be a tendency to avoid this confrontation or this resolution. There seems to some kind of defense mechanism. I have the feeling that the problem is always that the problem is not confronted. Not so much the problem itself, but the fact that it is not confronted.
Yes, and that is because the ego is clear, it really wants to survive. So if it sees any threat, it is going to do what it can, even if it means avoiding the problem to ensure its survival, it will do that, you see. It does not want to die.
Yes, so apart from being us, so the ego is definitely part of me, but it also seems to have its own consciousness, its own intelligence.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is witnessed, because who knows that?
Yes. Okay.
But what happens is, with the grace of the teaching, all this gets exposed more and more. So in simple terms, in daily living, you will see, let's say earlier you were blaming people or saying you should not be this way, you should not be that way, and so on. You suddenly start looking at yourself that, am I just speaking based on what I think is right and wrong, and because these are my beliefs, and are not someone else's beliefs as relevant as mine? Because we are both shaped by circumstances, genetics and conditioning. So this is what starts happening. You see, your relationships get redefined, and the teaching really does not need the help of the ego in this. It will happen if it is meant to happen. It creeps in, and then you see that your vision is changing. It's turning around. Your relationship dynamics are changing. How you viewed people are changing. How you view yourself is changing. That is the grace of the teaching. And what has happened? Your beliefs have started dropping away. Your beliefs that this person is good and this person is bad have started dropping away. The congealed energy is dropping away. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Do we have someone? Do we have Sunita here? I don't know. Yes, Sunita. I'm
Can
not
you
able
see
to
me?
See you right now.
Okay.
Yes, I can see you now.
Okay. Happy Guru Purnima, Gautam.
Thank you.
Please accept my pranams heartfully, and I'm really, really grateful to Baba for giving this 4 months has been, you know, I have told this earlier, but today it's the most important day where I have to tell this, that, you know, Baba brought you in the right moment of time. I used to be a person who used to be very organized. I used to, you know, think things like, you know, plan everything the way how I plan it should happen. But the 5 months has completely changed me. He brought you in such a correct time in my life, you know, where my whole perspective of thinking of life, because, you know, I've been fighting with a health issue. So, you know, it's been completely changed. Like, you know, my perspective, it's not fully changed. As you said, you know, I consider the half, you know, glass half full, but still definitely it's made a great impact in my life. And I'm really grateful to Baba and grateful to you. Okay.
That's beautiful.
My question today. Thank you so much. My question
today is...
Can I
just say one thing? You mentioned about planning. You know, I also love planning when I'm at work, because I like things orderly and planned. But then I read Maharaj's quotation and I burst out laughing. He said, those who make plans will be born to carry them out. And those who don't make plans need not be born.
Okay. So even if it's a Sai Sandhya or whatever, I used to plan exact till the minute details as to how much spoons is needed for the particular, you know, thing. That organized I was. And, you know, now I realize that, as you say, everything. Now I've been planning to go back to Luxembourg and it's not happening as the way I want to. Nothing is in my control, you know. So as you said, it's all God's will. It's taking time to sink in. It's not so easy, you know, because every time it says, no, you can do it. But again, you know, the teaching which you have said sinks in slowly, little by little. So it's a fight always going on internally. But at the end of the day, somewhere it really helped. And some other time I will share you one experience which happened recently. Maybe next Sunday is the right time in Baba's thing to share with you. So today my question is, see, suppose you say that people are born with their own, their own patterns, or what patterns they carried in their past lives or whatever. So if you get a lot of superstitions, or this might happen or that might happen, say, suppose you're praying, there's power goes off, or you're doing something, all those things. So how do we get rid of it, or how do we accept it, saying that, no, you know, how do I go about it, or anybody goes about it? If you have a superstition, please guide me.
You see, all superstitions are fear-based, because it's the fear of something happening to me. It is the fear of the death of the me. So let's say you have grace, you have a guru, let's say Sai Baba. The faith in that master, that comes to the fore. And then one can see how superstitions operate. What is it that is fearful? Why am I afraid? Because I want to survive, you see. My life is so precious. So a lot of these superstitions which people follow are because of this inherent fear, psychological fear, not biological fear. The psychological fear of the me that wants to ensure its survival. Now, it's very simple. What happens? You have to cross the road. You are going to look left and right before crossing. Especially in India, you will look left and right. Because there's a biological fear of death. So it's fine. The psychological fear is all the stories we build around it. That, oh my God, I saw this black cat crossing the road. What do I do now? Now, either you cross the road or you turn away, depending on how much you believe in that thing of black cats crossing the road. So either way, an action has to be taken. But you see, the beauty of this teaching is that it does not reject any of the two. This teaching says that whether you cross the road or you don't because you have seen the cat is what was meant to happen. This is how gentle this teaching is, you see. The whole point is the teaching is focusing its sharp light on exactly the psychological fear, the psychological suffering. So supposing, let's say a personality is drawn to superstition, let it be drawn to superstition. It does not reject that personality, for example. But the point is, just dig deeper, explore deeper. Why am I superstitious? What do I fear? What will happen to me? So this is where the light starts shining. And you'll see a lot of things when you look within, as I started this talk by saying, look within. And you can see what happens, what is your relationship thereafter with superstitions. Are you still, is it creating the sense of fear that it would earlier? This all has to be explored, see?
Okay. So if I know that it is, you know, it is out of fear. I know that it's because I saw in one of your, you know, podcasts that it's all because of you want an outcome, or you want, say, for example, I'm praying to God, or suppose the Baba goes off, whatever. You want an outcome from, you know, your guru or whatever. So Will this slowly fade off if we start submitting that thought also to the guru, or how does this work? Because I don't want that, because I know it is based on fear. So how do I get rid of it?
So what you have asked is most beautiful. You see, this what is enough itself is that I don't want this, because one has recognized that the trouble it is creating. That itself is, that earnestness is enough. Now allow the teaching and the master to do the job. Don't allow the doership of the ego that will say, oh, I can do something now. It is in my power. It is in my control. Just allow it, because the intent is there. I don't want this anymore. So allow that intent, that earnestness to do its job. Otherwise, it is another exercise in frustration, because the ego has taken ownership of that intent and now thinks I can do something to get rid of this faster. So there is no going back. The fact that it has come to awareness is more than enough.
Thank you, Gautam. It's so peaceful seeing you here every Sunday. I can't express it. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Yes, Kunal.
Hi, good morning, Gautam. Thank you very much for taking my question. I recognize that it's the ego that is asking, but we know that, I mean, given the fact that it's the source or consciousness that is the doer of everything, which is making everything come about. And on the other hand, our true nature is also consciousness or the source. Doesn't that then make us the doer in a way? I mean, if it's the source that is doing everything, and inherently or fundamentally we are also the source, doesn't that mean that actually we are the doer? Or is it that in the manifested form, we are not the doer, and we confuse that with us being the doer on the consciousness level. I don't know if that was clear.
No, I understand what you are trying to say, Kunal. But let's take it as a simple example.
Mm-hmm.
You have a certain nature. Some people will like that nature, some people won't. That nature has been shaped by your genetics and conditioning. So in that sense, are you the doer of your nature? You're not. Consciousness
right.
is the doer of your nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you are an individual operating in society. So what happens is when you talk to people in all your relationships, you are still the same person, but now you no longer claim ownership either of your own nature, or you don't hold the other responsible for their nature, because now you have recognized that it is the nature of consciousness which manifests in different people as different personalities. So it is both. It is two sides of the same coin. So whatever you say and do is shaped by factors not in your control. So in that sense, you are not the doer of that, you see. That is what the teaching is pointing to. But what you do is we claim ownership of that. The doership is the ownership. I did something. The other did something to me.
So consciousness itself, I mean, given that everything is consciousness, it would be meaningless to, it would be meaningless for consciousness to say that I did something, because that would create duality.
You're quite right. You are quite right.
So in that sense, whenever there is an, whenever there is a doership, mentality or a doership thought arising, that itself means that an identity is being created. And so the teaching helps you get away from that, or realize that that's really not true.
Quite right. And I gave this example recently of a very successful businessman who had come to my teacher and said, you know, my hard work has made me successful. My intellect has made me successful. And he kept on going about how successful he was. And my teacher told him, pray tell all of us, where did you acquire all these attributes? We would also like to acquire them. We would also like to be millionaires. You see, that's what he was pointing to. This ownership, I am successful. Rather than success happened as a result of attributes gifted to me by consciousness. Success happened as a result of circumstances gifted to me by consciousness. You see, this approach brings about humility, that you are just a small piece of the puzzle. So that I did something, therefore I am successful, is the delusion of the ego based on doership.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Harish.
Hi. My pranams to you for Guru Purnima. My question is that, you know, many a times during satsang, I have seen this hand of yours where you say the outside and the inward. You know, when we sit here, I sit this 1 hour, I do feel that shift. Now, carrying it, I had a very imbalanced week last week, and I know I sit here, I look forward to this. It's like a crutch. It's like a hold where you give us, where you give me that moment of peace. I know I have to go back again and go back into the next week. And like you say, have faith. If even if you talk about Baba, Sai Baba, like you have your relationship with Sai Baba from a very young age, even I've had my faith with Sai Baba. But you are here in front of me and it works for me. Whereas the faith exists and I go back into the next week, but I'm lost, that imbalance. Is it a chemical imbalance? Is it, what is it? I can't figure. But where is that hold or that kind of this presence that brings the peace? Why can't I carry it? Why am I not able to bring it and be with it constantly? Yes, my ego, my mind plays tricks and it has its all the possible four C's that we have. We have complaints, we have comparisons, we have criticisms, we have resistance to change, all that. But I can't get a grip. And here I can.
So Harish, you see, it's not really about chemicals and all that, which may be one aspect, but look at the years upon years of conditioning which one is operating on. That generally does not go in a trifle, you see. It takes time. And why not look at it the other way? Why not say that earlier I didn't even have this teaching. Now at least I have this. So at least this has brought some peace into my life. So if this feeling of gratitude arises, and this acceptance that, okay, consciousness or the source now gifted me this beautiful teaching, so I must trust and allow it to take its course rather than me wanting to hasten the process and all that. Let the suffering continue till it is destined to, but be thankful that at least this much, Lord, you have given me. And then it will start flowering and unfolding.
But being here gives me a sense of balance, and being off, generally on my own, is imbalanced. So this balance is something that is so attractive, and like you're a crutch. What do I do with it?
You see, the balance is within you. The balance you are feeling is within you. I am just pointing to that balance. So that balance is not leaving you. The balance is always there. It is the imbalanced thinking mind which is overlaid on the balance. So it's not that you're losing balance and you're getting imbalanced. It's nothing like that. The sheer fact that you feel balance now means you are feeling it within yourself. Can that leave? No, it is there. The imbalance, which is all the shenanigans and cartwheels of the thinking mind based on your past experiences in life, your past conditioning, that is a monkey that is now afraid you're not noticing it. So it's going to jump around even more. That is why I say sometimes it's not easy. It is awareness and witnessing that separates one from the monkey mind. The monkey mind wants to make sure that it is the center of your story, you see. That is what happens. And perhaps now you have first seen that there is obviously a sense of balance because I feel it. I just feel it goes in my daily life on other days. But at least that recognition has happened. So please trust and allow that. That's what I keep saying. It is within you.
I agree it's within me. I completely agree it's within me. Because if I have it but now, I should. But moments of witnessing and awareness, moments of witnessing and awareness during the course is very, very negligible. And it's more confusing. It's more confusing than figuring between, am I concentrating? Because you know what? Between this thinking mind, working mind, this formula, that these two words that you told me, they work miraculous with me. But it's very short-lived in my, it's unconscious. Suddenly when it's conscious, I can feel it. Yes, this is happening. But most of it is unconscious.
But thank your stars, because there are many who are living their lives completely unconsciously.
Thank you. Thank you.
You see, that is what Eckhart Tolle has said in his books, A New Earth and all that. That for some, recognition has taken place that they've been unconscious all this while. Of course, unconscious does not mean physically. But people are suffering so much that they are not aware that they are suffering. The first step is to be aware. That is what the teaching does. The witnessing. It's a big step, Arish. Don't consider it a small step. It's a huge step.
The temples are, temples swell. The head is heavy. It chokes you. And it's like a battle. You want to be free from it. You want to be so badly free from it.
Yes, I can understand. Expressing gratitude to the teaching enables it to grow. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes, Monica.
Pranam to Gautamji first. I've been watching your videos from last 2 years and I am off the screen for this Zoom meeting from so long. It has been started. And I never felt like to come in and participate, but I know everybody and how they're talking. I can feel everybody. And today, somehow I felt I have to join the Zoom meeting and I am not a tech-savvy person. And it happens in seconds, like the universe make it happen for me. I'm totally, I don't know like much about this. I'm sitting in my temple wala room and it happened. And the things which you do is just to say, the teaching will come gradually. Harish ji, my situation was just like you only. Every time I used to feel so nice on Sunday, I said, oh my God, sahi jagah mein aa gayi. And then the things don't go. And I feel like bilkul frustrations are. But things, they start happening. Harish ji, I can feel you. My situation was like you only. Aaj se 2 mahine pehle. Abhi gradually within few days, I feel that it starts, that everything is happening. And my question is to you, Gautamji, when the concept drops and when the belief system drops, is there some void, some emptiness, like the soul yes. is coming?
That is the emptiness, which is the absence of the thinking mind of the ego. That is the void. And early on, it can be scary because you feel literally empty. But then...
How?
That emptiness is pure being, which does not depend on any content. Then you start enjoying it more and more.
I was a bit scared because I thought everything is going, my concepts regarding relationships, regarding any relation or anything regarding the sadhana. Everything is dropping. What happened to me? I'm losing something. Some void was coming in. So I have a very desperate question, this only to you, and that much. And thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so
much. It's beautiful that is happening.
All Baba's grace and the universe make it happen through you. The beautiful, cute postman.
Thank you. Thank you. Better than not being a cute postman. You know, I have a dear friend in Delhi and he's a big fan of Nisargadatta Maharaj. So years ago, he came and told me, he said, you know, I love Maharaj so much, I'm going to have a tattoo of his on my body. I said, I think your marriage will be over.
Oh my God. We met at Tina's place, if you don't remember me.
At Tina's place, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. I'm so happy. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, Meenakshi.
Yeah. Hi, Gautam.
Hello.
My question is, in the talk you mentioned that Nisargadatta Maharaj used to say that sincerity is very important in the entire process. So, and earnestness. But the question is, am I the doer of that, even that? Because sometimes the witnessing happens very naturally and sometimes it is, it's not a natural process, it's not effortless. So is earnestness in my hands or am I the doer?
You're quite right. In that sense, it is an attribute which is not in your hands. But what is Maharaj pointing to is, the earnestness which he's pointing to is that innate feeling that, you know, I really want this. I really want peace. I really want this. I've seen enough of life. That earnestness, if that stays as the focal point, that pulls one faster to the teaching. So it's more like a pointer that earnestness and sincerity, of course, as you rightly said, are eventually God's will, based on God's plan for you, so to speak. But if we are keeping these as focal points, if we ruminate about the teaching, think about the teaching in our daily lives, you know, see our relationships in a new light, then in that sense, the teaching is always with us. In that sense, he refers to earnestness.
Okay.
So earnestness cannot be your doing.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Roshni.
Hello.
Yes, Roshni. Hello.
Sir, first of all, it's a Guru Purnima and I want to thank you for being my teacher. You have been the best gift I could ever receive from the universe. And I feel so happy to see you and talk to you. Basically, yeah. I don't have any question, but it's like, even if I have any question, my mind is like, no, this can't be a question because your teaching comes and literally pesters me. Like, what is this? Okay, so sir, I really want to thank you. And on this Guru Purnima, I want that God to bless you with a lot of energy. So you enlighten all our lives and, you know, just thank you for everything.
That's very sweet and kind of you. You know, you mentioned the word gift and I remembered one thing which Aurobindo said, which perhaps we can all look at, that next time we give a gift to someone, anyone, he said, whenever you gift something to someone, remember that you are gifting it to the same divine in all beings. You're not gifting it to an individual. And that's such a beautiful pointer, you see, because what we do to our near and dear ones, we have an expensive, beautiful gift because they are near and dear to us. And to someone who's, oh, this person has invited me for his wedding. I don't even know him that well. I'm going to give a small envelope with cash or something. But when the same consciousness is seen this way, that it is the same force which animates all of us, this process of gifting from consciousness to consciousness becomes a very beautiful ritual. It actually becomes a sacred ritual. And that is why with this teaching and understanding, you find yourself becoming more and more generous. Why? Because if consciousness is gifting something to consciousness, it means that consciousness is gifting something to itself.
Yes. And one more thing, sir. Sir, I miss monthly talks at your residence a lot. I miss that vibration. I miss that presence. It's such a blissful Sunday for us.
Yes. So, let's see when God wills for these Sundays to restart.
Yes.
But this way, Roshni, what has happened is that, you know, if you look at it another way, so many people who can't make it for the talks in Bombay. You see, if this lockdown had not happened, these live streams would not have happened. So the universe forced these Sunday talks, which actually, as you said, are once a month at home, but have become once a week. So I'm so glad that people have benefited from these talks. And I know it has come at an expense of the talks at home, but it is a small price to pay. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Yes.
You have a bright smile, Roshni. Yes, Indira.
Namaste, Gautam. A very happy Guru Purnima to you. I just want to take a moment to express my gratitude towards you and all the great masters. The teachings are in itself so beautiful, but the way you have been presenting to us in such a selfless, graceful manner, I just can't express my thank you to you. I'm looking forward to these teachings and I'm very glad this lockdown has happened. We wouldn't know you. We wouldn't get to meet you because I don't stay in Mumbai. So.
You see, my motivation for sharing these teachings is only one. I saw how greatly it benefited me. And that is what I wish to share. It is not some ulterior motive. It is not some, anything behind it. But this, that if the gift of peace can be given to people, it's the greatest gift, and I got that from my teacher. So it's a joy to offer it, whether it is taken or not is God's will. Okay, thank you.
It's so overwhelming. Thank you so much.
Yes, Kranti.
Good morning, Gautam sir.
Morning.
I just wanted to extend my heartfelt gratitude. Actually, the more grateful I am, the more loss of words and more of silence. So
that's good.
The more deeper the silence, it's very tough for the words to come out. So this presence is divine. I don't have any words. Maybe just the tears roll down every time that feeling of gratefulness comes.
Yes, those are tears of gratitude. You see, Vimlananda used to say something which really appealed to me because even it's my nature. He said, even when you say, I love you, you have watered down the feeling because the vibration of love has come upon the tongue as words and has got diluted and burnt the essence and then it is projected out. So imagine the number of people who are not expressive by nature, but still love you. You see, that is something we miss because we place so much importance on words. But the love, according to me, is love in action. Actions speak louder than words, as the saying goes. So words are truly not necessary. So I fully understand where you're coming from. Okay.
Thank you so much, sir.
Yes, Muskan.
Hello, sir. Good morning.
Morning.
And very, very happy Guru Purnima. And thank you for appearing in our consciousness at the right point of time. And since it was, I feel it is the gift of physical lockdown that we are experiencing. But the gift is that we have, got freedom from our mental lockdown. So
yes,
that is one beautiful side effect, I can say. And I have really got my Muskan back in these 4 months through the way you genuinely put across your teachings and, your podcasts I'm listening to, which you have dedicated the recent episode to your guru, Siddharameshwar Maharaj ji. So it really brings a lot of things to perspective. And now I can see, because with repetition, it is so clear when you have been saying time and again that there is a thinking mind and there is a working mind. Just a small incident I would like to share. Now, this is 1 month. Today is 5th of July. And 5th June, my dad had a bad fall at home and he got fractured and we had to get him operated in emergency and all that stuff. But I was surprised it was not moving me. I was participating. It was my duty to be there. But I was not getting hassled. So that was a big, in that chaos also, I could somewhere see that there is a calm which has been restored, that the duties are duties, but who am I? Even if worst come worst has to happen, I was just witnessing. That is, I think, the beautiful gift which happened during this lockdown.
Yes, Muskan, that is beautiful. That is the teaching in operation. And also what happens is, with an incident like this, even fear will arise. After all, he's your father, right? So supposing a doctor says, let's do surgery, it is natural that fear arises. But even that is witnessed. That is the beauty of the teaching. You see, we don't take ownership of it and say, my fear, and then we get embroiled in that whole story.
And that equilibrium was restored, that neutrality. Even if I was going, and there were moments when I was, losing my cool, but then I could come back to the neutral aspect, saying that anyways, everything is going to be okay and nothing is in my control. And
beautiful.
I kept on operating that it is Sai Baba's gift and he will handle. I don't have any control.
Yes, whatever is his gift.
It just happened. Yes, yes. And I listened to your talks even when I was in hospital with Dad and with Ramesh Ji's talks. I kept on reiterating that it is God's will. It is God's will. I kept on listening and you were my anchor even in the hospital. So last 1 month, I couldn't come for the live sessions, but I always heard the YouTube episodes which were uploaded later on. And even yesterday, I was listening while I was coming back from the hospital. I was listening to your podcast, which you have dedicated to Siddharameshwar Maharaj Ji. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
We'll take one more, I think, because we are running out of time. One or two more. Yes, Karthika. Are you there? I don't think so. Let's move on to yes, Pragati. Pragati, are you there? I don't know what's happening. Maybe some connectivity issues.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me now?
Good morning.
Pragati, yes, sir.
Pragati, I can't see you.
I am right here.
Okay.
The video is on. Heartfelt gratitude on this Guru Purnima. I've been avoiding raising my hand here because I thought I would only cry if I say something.
That's sweet.
And everybody has said whatever I had in my heart in terms of gratitude towards you for the entire lockdown. And no questions today because the questions are dissolving. It doesn't come up. Big things don't matter at all.
Yes.
There's this calmness around whatever is happening. There's no question. There's nothing happening. It's flowing. Life is flowing.
Great. That's does one want.
And even if situations arise, I can sit back and look at it. I can easily let it pass. And even if I scream, I can see myself screaming.
Good. Beautiful. Okay.
I'm in a happy space, and thanks to you and Baba. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Gopal?
Hi, Gautam. First of all, deep regards to you in the teachings which you have given to us, and especially to me, because the teaching that whatever has to happen will happen, that has really changed the way I look at things. I have been following you for quite a long and silently sitting, not switching on my video, and just absorbing the peace which emanates from you. And today I just can't. I always think about you, and whenever I'm in trouble, suddenly your video pops up and it calms me down. And I have a background of spiritual practices, and I always used to try to control the things. But now if things go wrong and if something happens, it's your teaching. I mean, the teaching comes into picture that whatever has to happen will happen. And I just sit and let the world go down, or, you know, things go. And
Think of me when things go wrong. When they go right, I'm fine.
Yes, yes. I have to. It's always your thing. That teaching has really touched me. It has really helped me a lot. The mental chatter which you say, which you try to, you know, prolong the suffering, that has reduced a lot, and I'm really grateful.
Thank you. Thanks for that. Okay, the last one, I think. Yes, Kartika.
Hello, Gautam. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for this meeting. One of the biggest identifications is for me the role identification as a gender. And with that, there come several concepts of fitting or having control about the other to feel better or to use someone to feel better. And it has nothing to do with the divine in me, which is every time whole. And I feel limited by the identification of a gender. And it's even more difficult for me when I go outside, because then I feel how others see me as a gender. And sometimes it's for me like I'm seeing into their head, and I can see, yes, now you can act as a gender, and now I'm waiting for it. I hope you can understand what I'm meaning. Thank you.
So is there a question?
Yeah, maybe you can tell something to this problem.
You see, gender is also polaric opposites, male and female. It's a structure of duality. just like up and down, left and right, front and back, and so on. So male and female and the wide spectrum of everything in between, so to speak. Now, identification with gender is also identification with me as a collective, because I get now a collective sense of myself. This is who I am. This is my gender. This is me. This is not only my story, but this is the story of me and my gender. And this is how the conditioning takes place. And you see, there have been centuries of brutality, for example, against women. It still goes on in parts of the world. So the point to note is that this is all a play of consciousness, yet each person, each gender is free to do whatever they think and feel they should do. But what should not be missed is that the electricity, the light of consciousness, the presence, which is the reason why I am speaking and you are listening, it does not have a gender. The gender is of the body. The presence does not have a gender. This point we forget. And this teaching says, please go prior to gender. Okay? We can explore this another time, but we are running out of time. So thank you for the question. Take this last one. Yes, Rahul.
Good morning, Gautam. Happy Purnima, Guru Purnima. And to your Guruji also, I've been watching the 1 hour videos that have just transformed my lives. Mm-hmm. 4 weeks ago was the first time I actually saw your video. So I thank the Google algorithm, the YouTube algorithm that showed up.
Very few people thought of that. I hope everyone is listening.
That is the divine will, I guess. I mean, I have nothing to say. I have no questions. The 4 weeks of these Sunday talks have changed my life, because I was always like, I should do something. I should meditate. I should chant. And now it's like it's happening through me, or at least the shift has happened.
Beautiful.
And for that, I really want to thank you.
My pleasure. Okay, so let's just end this on a few minutes of silence. Thank you, Rahul. I would rather that everyone considers me as their dearest friend. Nothing else. The rest is unnecessary. But do consider me as someone you love, not as a separate person. Someone that is part of you. I will read out one quotation of Maharaj, which I have mentioned before as well. The consciousness in you and the consciousness in me, apparently two, really one, seeks unity, and that is love. Allow me the privilege of repeating this. You know, in the Sufi tradition, or even with the ghazal singers, no matter how great the master is, when he goes onto the stage, he asks the audience, "Ijazat hai, to main shuru karu." If I have your permission, may I begin? Why? Because he is seeing only consciousness, you see. The consciousness in you and the consciousness in me, apparently two, really one, seeks unity, and that is love.